Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Hey, it's 12:03, Thursday afternoon, September 15th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. I'm Rob Hart. The new edition of the Ford Mustang includes a feature that lets you rev the engine even when you're not in the car. We'll learn more about that in our next segment. But right now, the report on retail sales is out, along with the latest tally of jobless claims. Plus, mortgage rates climbed to 6%. Something we have not seen since 2008. Let's comb through the numbers with Bob Bruska, chief economist with Fact and Opinion Economics, based in New York. Bob, thanks for joining us today. Despite all of this discussion about whether or not we're in a recession, if the numbers indicate that, the job market continues chugging along.
Yeah, the job market has been a huge surprise. This decline in jobless claims is quite surprising, given weakness in other economic data. Although the retail sales report poked its head up above zero today, it's still not a very strong report. And if you take the autos out of it, we have another decline in retail sales. So it was only automobiles that poked it up. It's very difficult. The job market remains robust, but the economy clearly is slowing down. We've got weaker reports and for industrial production and for the look ahead from the Philadelphia Fed and from the Empire State, the New York Fed. There are a lot of weak reports out today, but the job market is immovable.
On the retail sales front, is it concerning as an economist that if you take autos and gas out of the picture, the retail sales declined even at back-to-school time?
Well, yeah, people say this all the time. Remember, these data are seasonally adjusted. And so the data, the seasonal factors expect that bump in spending from back to school. So that shouldn't really be a big part in the data. That should be reflected in the seasonal adjustment factors. But, the point that you make is correct. I mean, when you look at retail sales, there's really a lot more weakness in this report. You've got some bounce in autos. It may just be a one-month thing. It doesn't look at all like a trend yet. And a lot of weakness elsewhere in spending. And, those spending numbers have been gradually coming down. So if you look at the growth rates for spending, they're weaker. And if you deflate them for inflation, they look, quite weak. So there isn't much here to drive growth. There's something from the Atlanta Fed called GDP Now. And it looks at GDP for the quarter ahead based on data we have in hand only. So it's not exactly a forecast, but their number is under 0.5% now for the third quarter. That's a sharp markdown on today's data.
And mortgage rates above 6% for the first time since 2008, before the financial crisis and the Great Recession and the jobless recovery that followed it. Why did it take so long for rates to reach this number?
Well, a number of reasons, mostly that the bond market hasn't really pushed yields up, and mortgage rates, we tend to look at 30-year mortgage rates, and they have a duration that's more like a 7 to 10-year note in the bond market. So you look at that section of the bond market to see what's going on. And the bond market has been thinking that the Fed's going to get inflation controls, even though inflation has been really high. Longer-term interest rates have held in there, even as the Fed has raised short-term rates. So this has been a bit of a conundrum, and it's led to something we call an inverted yield curve, with short rates higher than longer rates. And that for a while protected mortgage rates, but now there is more pressure. The inflation numbers have been a little bit worse. The bond market's getting hit a little bit, and you're seeing it in the mortgage market. It's a tough time for homeowners.
Bob Bruska, chief economist, Fact and Opinion Economics, based in New York. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Coming up, the American muscle car is alive and well at Ford.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Ford has unveiled the seventh generation model of its legendary Mustang. Let's check the specs with Jeff Gilbert, CBS News automotive reporter in Detroit. The Detroit Auto Show in full swing and in person for the first time in 3 years. And before we talk about the Mustang, Jeff, what's it like to have an in-person Detroit Auto Show once again?
It's very nice to have an auto show, and very different. They moved the show from its frigid January time frame, and you in Chicago know all about having a cold time frame for an auto show, to September, where it's quite nice. And the Detroit show also pivoting. It's becoming more of a consumer show again, like Chicago, and a little less of a media show.
And President Biden was there yesterday, and everyone saw the pictures of his eyes going wide looking at the brand new Corvette that was on display.
Yeah, in fact, I was there the day before when they were shining it up because they were going, you know, hint, hint. I think he's going to like to look at this Corvette. And when he went on the floor, GM CEO Mary Barra took him right over. And, you know, he actually did take a little ride in an electric vehicle. So, you know, while the Corvette was really cool, the purpose of being here was to push EVs.
Yeah, Biden is a longtime Corvette guy, but Mustang guys and Mustang gals, they will have two different muscle cars from which to choose. We talked about the electric Mustang before, but Ford is now coming out with what you might want to call Mustang Classic.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is a gasoline-powered Mustang. It's a new version. The exterior styling is very evolutionary. I mean, you had to put them next to each other to tell much of a difference. The interior has been greatly upgraded. They've added a few horsepower, and they've added an extra trim. You know, Mustangs like to have special trims like the Bullet Mustang and the Shelby's. Well, now they have the Dark Horse, which is an all-black, you know, kind of tough-looking, sinister-looking Mustang with 500 horsepower.
Doesn't this run against the grain, though, especially in the muscle car space where the automakers have all said they're going to phase out their gasoline-powered muscle cars and possibly come back with electric models? And then here's Ford saying, yeah, we're still continuing production of the gasoline Mustang for the time being.
Funny you should ask that question, because we asked that question of Bill Ford last night, who's the chairman of the company, and he said they'll keep making gasoline-powered versions of the Mustang as long as customers want them. Of course, they have the electric Mustang Mach-E and a fast GT version, and you've got to assume that they'll have something electric in a Mustang coupe in the not-too-distant future. And the reality is that fuel economy rules, being what they are, is even if all Mustangs don't become pure EV, the gasoline ones are going to need electrification and hybridization to get that kind of power and the kind of fuel economy. I mean, that is just basic engineering these days.
Jeff Gilbert, CBS News automotive reporter in Detroit. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The early season numbers are in, and they show the power of the NFL. Let's take a look at the numbers with Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Vertier Group based in Chicago. Tim, thanks for joining us today. I'm going to take a look at the top 10 Nielsen programs on network television from 40 years ago, and you only had one football program in the top 10, and that was Monday Night Football. And then this week, the entire top 10 list is football, with one exception, that old stalwart 60 Minutes. I mean, football and live sports are really the only things that are holding up broadcast TV at this point.
Yeah, absolutely, Rob. I mean, I don't know what that says about the state of broadcast television. Either that there's just a shocking decline in large audience-grabbing dramas and comedies and sort of traditional classic primetime fare. And that abandonment has led to major holes in those schedules and in steps. Maybe the only thing that distinguishes from streaming opportunities and streaming offerings, and that's live sports. And the king, of course, of live sports for the last decade or two has been the NFL and football generally, frankly. It does spill over into college and big games as well. But make no mistake, the live sports thing is a distinct, different, and maybe unique scenario that today most of the streaming operators don't sort of, have a handle on yet. Although today is an interesting day to be having this conversation, right?
Yeah, yes. This is the debut of Thursday Night Football on Amazon Prime, and already saw a number of people saying that I should probably figure out how Amazon Prime works this morning as opposed to fumbling around with the smart TV remote tonight. But I do want to ask you, how many parallels exist between this moment and, let's say, 70 years ago when all of the radio network dramas moved over to television? Sports on the radio found a way to make that transition, and radio found a new way to find an audience after the dramas moved to TV. And will we see a similar thing happen with broadcast television, where broadcast TV kind of becomes what local radio used to be, and all the entertainment programs move to this new technology of streaming.
Yeah, I think it's possible, right? I mean, we see some signals of the decline in the traditional scheduling of broadcast networks, right? The seemingly every 2 year or 3 year float of the idea by NBC to possibly do away with, in Chicago, the 9 o'clock last hour of prime time. We see the decline of just television programming, especially in prime time, across a whole litany of content genres, and just the simple unplugging, if you will, of cables and satellite subscription. You know, broadcast television is very durable for sure, and the reach of broadcast television, more people can watch it than any other form of video offering out there, streaming included. But the reality is the broadcast television served a purpose for the last, you know, number 50 plus years, right? And it's essentially as a department store, if you will, of programming across all kinds of genres. We're now in a world of niches, right? And streaming is sort of the ultimate expression of that and personalized at that. And when people can get stuff that they want to watch individually at their fingertips and make choices, that's very hard for quote unquote broadcast television trying to serve a broad audience. And frankly, the only things that really kind of bring broad audiences anymore are things like NFL football games and major events like the Oscars. And even those are in decline. So, you know, that's a relative statement. So it's durable, however, but we'll see how it evolves.
And this is a conversation for another time. Maybe this will be the jumping off point for the next conversation. But what happens? It used to be 40 years ago, you would have these hit programs and they would bring in hundreds of millions of dollars in profits to their network, which were then reinvested into program research and development. And yes, you had a lot of, you know, bomb shows like Bring 'Em Back Alive or Voyagers or The Devlin Connection, but that also made Three's Company possible. And what happens when you have much smaller streaming revenues, and how do you develop new programs when there's a lot less money flowing in? So that'll be the discussion for the next time. Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Verter Group based in Chicago. I look forward to having that conversation. Still ahead in Technology Thursday, we learn about a game changer in the crypto industry.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio. WBBM union workers reach a tentative contract agreement with railroad companies. The latest group of migrants shipped north are dropped at the home of the vice president. In Technology Thursday, a major software upgrade will have a huge impact on cryptocurrency. And there's a breakup between clothing retailer Gap and rapper Kanye West. WBBM Business, the markets are mixed. The Dow is up 96 points, the NASDAQ is down 47, and the S&P 500 is down 7. AccuWeather says hazy sunshine today, some clouds turning warmer, a high of 83, 78 degrees right now under partly sunny skies at 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour, a tentative deal to avoid a national rail strike has been reached. President Biden made the announcement from the White House this morning.
This agreement is validation of what I've always believed. Unions and management can work together for the benefit of everyone.
The accord means there will be no interruptions in Metra service tomorrow. The agreement must be approved by the union's rank-and-file members. The bitter political battle over the Biden administration immigration policy has reached the home of Vice President Harris.
Two buses of migrants from the U.S.-Mexico border were dropped off outside the U.S. Naval Observatory, home of Vice President Harris. About two dozen men and women stood outside at dawn, holding plastic bags full of belongings before moving to a church. It's unclear which GOP governor sent them. Greg Abbott has been busing migrants out of Texas to cities with Democratic mayors. Arizona's Doug Ducey has also adopted the policy first dreamed up by Donald Trump. Yesterday, Florida's Ron DeSantis sent two planes of immigrants to Martha's Vineyard. Sagar Magani, Washington.
It's 12:32 as the Noon Business Hour continues, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are mixed at this hour. We're joined by Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital and author of the book Calculated Risk, based in Chicago. Michael, thanks for joining us today. It's somewhat remarkable there was not a little bit of pop based on the news that there was a tentative agreement between the freight railroads and the unions, given the importance of the railroad industry to the economy at large.
Well, good afternoon, Robin. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, that was some good news, but the market is all eyes are on the Fed. The Fed meets next week. They'll announce Wednesday. They're definitely going to raise rates. Bond prices are telling us it's going to be 75 basis points. It was expected to be about 50 about a month ago, and now it's up to 75. There are some folks saying it might even be 100. So things like union deals in one industry are just not going to move this market when the macro is what matters right now. So we're waiting for next Wednesday. We at MJP Capital are pretty confident it'll be a 75 basis point hike and then a pause. But the bond market is saying that there's, after the 75, there's another 50 to 75 coming and maybe even 100. I mean, the one-year treasury right now is yielding 4%. That's the highest I've seen it in, I mean, it's been over 10 years. And what's scary is that the yield curve is inverted drastically, which that generally signals recession. And the amount it's been inverted right now is the highest it's been in at least 25 years. I'm going back to the late 90s where the last time we had this kind of a setup. So the market is saying that we have a very it's a medium to high likelihood of a recession coming and that the Fed is being too hawkish. That's what the market is saying, and markets don't like things like that, and that's why we're lucky to be treading water. We were down pretty significantly about an hour ago. We've come back to almost flat. So we'll see what the Fed does next week. That's basically what we're waiting on.
Today's data points, retail sales, and of course first-time applications for unemployment shows a strong job market. What does that tell you today, both on the retail sales front and on the employment front?
Well, you know, those were good reports, but we also had some bad ones too. So, you know, we had the Philadelphia Fed Manufacturing Index came in really bad, and you know, industrial production was negative in August, and it was expected to be flat. So you've got both sides here. So it's a mixed bag. And most importantly, Powell and the Fed continue to talk about being hawkish. So these numbers, you know, if they came out more negative, it might cause a rally in stocks just because it would lower, you know, expectations of Fed rate hikes. But, you know, they come in mixed, and so the Fed's going to move. They're going to move probably 75 basis points, and we'll see what happens after that. But this market is not going to rally back, at least not any significant amount, until they're more comfortable with inflationary expectations and expectations of what Powell's going to do at the Fed.
And as far as the economic data is concerned, there are lots of indications that there is a slowdown taking place, if not a recession already. And if the mission is to break the back of inflation, is that something you want to see?
Well, that's what happened in the 80s, and that's what the market is very concerned about, is that Powell's going to pull a Volcker. Now, that actually was more necessary back then because we're talking about inflation numbers in the double digits. But Powell is talking very hawkishly. So, you know, that scares the market. This is the most headwinds I've seen in the stock market since the financial crisis in 08. So we've got a lot of things that are working against stocks. I'm actually impressed that the market is holding up. On your show, we said at 4250 S&P that it was a sale, and you know, we were right, and now we're at 3900, and we think it's around fair value, if not maybe going a little lower. But we're not going to get a rise in the stock market until the stock market participants are comfortable with inflationary expectations and what Powell is going to do.
Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk, based in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Technology Thursday, an upgrade that's being described as a game changer in the crypto industry.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday, and this afternoon we're looking at a massive software upgrade by Ethereum that's creating a buzz in the entire crypto sector. Let's learn more from Jeff Kilberg, founder and CEO of KKM Financial, based in Chicago. Jeff, tell us about this software upgrade, and it sounds like if it's fully successful, it's something that could take away a major point of criticism against the entire crypto sector.
I think you're right, Rob, and this is the silver lining. Clearly, it's been a tough year for cryptocurrency in general. We're seeing Bitcoin under 20,000. We've seen $1 trillion of losses in cryptocurrency in aggregate. But when you talk about Ethereum, this was a really long-awaited merge. We saw at midnight this happen. And this merge, or this much-anticipated switch, it's a much more energy-efficient infrastructure. And that's really important, because when you talk about Ethereum, arguably the most crucial platform in crypto, this is like a layer of software infrastructure that's going to support potentially $50 billion in customer funds and applications. So this was a really big deal, and this was the silver lining in 2022 after a pretty tough year for cryptocurrency.
And talking about cutting cryptocurrency's energy consumption, this merge, cutting it by more than 99%, and the energy consumption has been a major knock on the entire crypto sector for years by critics of it. Why was the process of Bitcoin mining and cryptocurrency so energy intensive in the first place?
Well, if you think about the way they mine Bitcoins, and this was really, globally, you saw people looking where they could find the cheapest electricity to run the computers to utilize and solve the algorithms to win that Bitcoin or Ethereum. So all this type of energy that was coming in or being drawn upon, they figured out how to become more efficient. And this is a part of the evolution. We talk about cryptocurrency. I'm a big believer in cryptocurrency in the long term, I should say. Of course, there's price fluctuations of the actual coins from Bitcoin, Ethereum, or Tether. I think you have to understand that this is going to continue to improve, and this is going to be a part of our daily lives. Look at the Illinois Recorder of Deeds. When you buy or sell a house, that is now being utilized, and it has for the last 8 years, inside of blockchain. So blockchain, cryptocurrency, they're all coming together here, and we're just seeing it improve year upon year. So this is a big deal, a small celebration for the cryptocurrency. We really had nothing to celebrate year to date.
With this much more efficient process, and how does this change the space in terms of bringing people into it, in terms of the valuation of cryptocurrencies? Describe, we've talked about how crypto's taken its lumps since January. Let's talk about the next year of crypto with this new software.
No, I think that's a great point. In short term, you're not going to see a dramatic effect or a turnaround. You're seeing cryptocurrency, specifically Bitcoin, really be a proxy or correlated to the NASDAQ 100. We see the NASDAQ 100, the selling pressure in those mega cap stocks, that really is like a one-to-one correlation. So I think we have to continue to get through the volatility in the equity market, specific to these technology stocks, which in turn spill over. When you see people losing money in technology, they have to reduce their exposure to cryptocurrency. So there is a correlation, but you're absolutely right, Rob. I think longer term, when you do see the markets move higher, when you see people come back and breathe and realize that this technology inside of cryptocurrency is improving and evolving, you will see more and more adoption. You're also seeing more and more trading opportunities when you're seeing exchanges. I know Citadel here in Chicago, or no longer in Chicago, I guess they moved down to Miami and Florida like everyone else leaving the state. But nonetheless, you are seeing more and more people have the opportunity to invest in a safe way and own some of these cryptocurrencies. So it's a big positive, despite the fact we're not going to feel a relief today.
Jeff Kilberg, founder and CEO of KKM Financial, based in Chicago. Thanks for joining us. Join us this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. And still to come, a star rapper terminates a deal with a national clothing retailer.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Kanye West is terminating his clothing company's deal with Gap, claiming contract violations. Let's get the latest now from Jan Rogers Niffin, CEO of J. Rogers Niffin Worldwide, based in New York. Jan, thanks for joining us today. This is a two-year-old agreement in which Gap would sell Kanye West-branded clothes in its stores, or online, the stores that do remain. Has this been a successful partnership for Gap so far?
Well, the real question, it's been better for Gap than it's been for Kanye, I suspect. But I never thought it was a good idea. And Mickey Drexler, who's the last guy that made Gap actually work, didn't think it was a good idea either, because Gap is this very generic, low-end, basically, product. And that's not what Yeezy is, you know. That's basically higher-end, cool fashion. And I never thought that really fit with the Gap, and I'm not surprised the agreement is ending, and I don't think it's really any much to do with the way the contract was written. I think it was really a disappointment, and I think the disappointment was the Gap didn't do for his brand what he was imagining they would do, and I'm not exactly sure why he imagined it was a good idea given how Gap has struggled, but for whatever reason, he's not getting what he wanted out of it. Now he's going to go out on his own, and I suspect that's a better idea.
Does that also illustrate the risk that big retailers take when they enter into celebrity partnerships? Yes, you get the publicity. Yes, you get the brand name. But at the same time, you're also attached to that celebrity's personal problems, of which Kanye's had plenty in the past 2 years.
I guess that's true, but I don't think that's what's driving this. What's driving this is Kanye's disappointment with Gap, not vice versa. But yes, that is always true. Anytime you sign up a celebrity deal, and very, very popular now, something horrible can happen, or the celebrity can do something horrible, or go through a very messy divorce, and it can really mess up your ability to market the product to the people you want to market to. So you've always got that risk in the process. But I think this was just not a marriage made in heaven when they started it. It just never seemed to click from my point of view of where that product should be sold. And I don't think Gap was the place. And I think it's more into putting it in the Gap, in my opinion.
Jan Rogers Niffin, the CEO of J. Rogers Niffin Worldwide, based in New York. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the Odyssey app.